This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series.
Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 6, Rialgar.
Stop fidgeting, Atticus! Ouch, Piper! You're tying it too tight!
The boy flinched away from her iron grip.
I won't be able to use my hand!
With a knowing look, Piper tugged her brother closer.
That's the point?
Her mechanical fingers tied an extra knot in the makeshift splint, hoping it would be enough to keep him from damaging his wrist any further. She gave her handiwork a once-over before looking up at him.
You're hurt.
Her voice lost its abrasive edge.
You need to relax and let me take care of things.
Atticus frowned.
Are you sure this'll work?
He realized she had used strips of fabric torn from her brand new dress and a bit of broken molding from the ship. He looked over at her, noting the distressed state of her garments.
What about your dress?
She couldn't fight the smile. Of course, he would be concerned for her welfare first.
You'll be fine. It is just an outfit.
This wasn't her first experience with triage, even before she had her run-in with Vel. When she had been tossed from the city with the other undesirables, brutalized and beaten by the guards, she had helped others with their broken limbs. Not that it had mattered in the end, as none of them had even... Piper shook the thoughts from her head.
Just don't pester it, or it will take longer to heal.
Atticus extended his left arm, scrutinizing the cuts and scrapes with wary eyes.
I suppose I can try to fix the engines with just one hand. Oh, Unit 2 can help.
Raising an eyebrow, Piper jabbed a finger into his chest.
Absolutely not. I know the captain would be lucky to have your help, but you need to rest.
She took a step back.
Just relax here, and I'm going to see if any of these other people need my help.
It took her some coaxing before she managed to extract a nod of acceptance from her brother. But, satisfied, Piper turned away from him and faced the rest of the bedlam unfolding upon the deck of the crashed pleasure yacht. Her entire life, she had always envisioned what it would be like to join the ranks of royalty and wealth. She would be surrounded by the most glamorous and posh people, dancing and drinking the night away with idle chatter about the state of affairs. When, in reality, they were nothing more than a bunch of snobby, stuck-up crybabies that couldn't even tie their own bootlaces without hollering for a servant. Many of them were what the working class, Piper included, referred to as floaters. People so wealthy and privileged, they could afford to live their entire lives on ships like this, never debasing themselves to set even a toe on land like the common folk. The double entendre, of course, had been intentional. To call them ill-equipped for a situation like this was beyond generous.
I say, girl!
Piper half jumped as she turned. There, leaning casually against the ship's railing, was a thin and disheveled man with an impossibly long mustache waxed to the point of defying gravity. The way he was staring at her caused her to click her tongue against her teeth.
Who? Me?
Of course you! Do you see any other deckhands about?
His mustache twitched.
I demand to know how long until we can be on our way. I paid good money for this trip, and I'll be damned if a storm keeps me from my vacation. Go find the captain and find out what's taking so long.
Why on Avis would you think I'm a deckhand?
The man pushed his brows together in a look of condescension.
I don't see anyone else around here with your skin color.
Rage fueled to life in her belly, but Piper managed to remain civil,
I'm not a deckhand, you snooty cockwomble. I'm wearing a dress.
She grabbed a fistful of the ruffles, using it as emphasis.
And the ship is broken.
She said the last word slowly, so that the man might understand his own idiocy. Even though the storm had appeared suddenly with no warning, the captain had managed to save them all by steering the wind-battered ship towards a large lake. But the blue lightning had destroyed their balloon, and repairs this far out were unlikely. Not to mention that the hull of the ship was cracked and buried beneath the muddy surface of the shallow lake. The man rolled his eyes.
Well, then change into your work clothes and go fix it. How hard can it be, honestly?
If Vel were here right now, he would sucker punch this man in the face and not even bat an eyelash, Piper thought as she chewed on her cheek. She clenched her own mechanical fingers into a tight fist. But the cyborg had a knack for landing them in trouble, and punching the snot out of this man wouldn't fix their predicament. She sucked in a deep breath, her shoulders heaving with dramatic effort as she exhaled slowly.
You're right, of course, sir. We should send someone down there to repair the damage.
She reached out and, with a gentle shove, pushed the puffed-up moron over the railing. After a surprised scream and a splash, Piper leaned over the edge of the ship and waved down at the sputtering man with a wide grin.
Let us know when you're done. After all, how hard can it be?
Okay, so it wasn't the best start to her mission of helping out, but it felt good. She made to turn away, to ignore the incoherent threats hurled in her direction, when she caught sight of something in the water. Having lived in Silverport for some time, she could recognize dark shapes beneath the surface, or the large wakes they left behind. While it wasn't as large as a whale, the ripple in the water was sizable enough to cause concern. Deciding that feeding the rich to unruly lake monsters would cast a pall over their already tenuous predicament, Piper waved down the robot standing beside her brother.
Unit 2, would you please haul Lord Womble there back into the boat?
Of course, Mum. It would be my pleasure.
Even if he does deserve to be eaten by whatever that is,
Piper muttered under her breath and turned back to her original task. She put her hands on her hips, looking around the chaos. Time to be helpful. Unfortunately, with this lot, helpful was a relative term.
Why are there so many bugs out here? Because we're outdoors and your perfume smells like flowers. If you don't like it, go back to your room.
It's so cold.
If you're cold, go build a fire. There's ample firewood on the shore.
My dress has mud on it.
Who cares? Stay away from the lake.
Why haven't we sent anyone ashore to scout yet?
I don't... Wait, that's actually a good question.
Exactly. How else are we going to find a suitable hotel before nightfall?
That's it. I've had enough,
Piper thought as she sucked in a deep breath. Injuries were few and far between, and the only bruises to be found were those to the floaters' egos. She wasn't really needed anymore, as most of them had their own servants, and she was tired of being mistaken as one. The last question, however asinine, had raised a good point. Despite some of the passengers going ashore for a makeshift party, she hadn't seen any of the actual crew scout the area. Surely they should investigate before allowing people to go down there. She looked up. On one side of the ship, there was a wide expanse of lake that led out towards a mountain range on the horizon. And on the other, a dense tree line, thick and lush. Piper wasn't familiar with this area, having only seen the coast to the west of Avis and the port town. If there were dangers in that forest, it would be better to spot them before said dangers came for the finest society had to offer, armed with only cucumber sandwiches and fondue forks. Piper massaged at that pain in her temple, She whirled around on her heel and stomped below deck. As she descended the stairs towards the captain's quarters, the shredded hem of her frilly dress caught on the tip of her shoe and she stumbled, sliding down the remaining distance. She landed painfully on her behind, the last step catching her in the back. With a groan, she pushed herself up into a seated position. She had fallen in love with the dress from the moment she first saw it, but she had to admit, walking around in the thing was a struggle. In a fit of frustration, Piper began tearing off large sections from the bottom until it only reached just below her knees, exposing her bloomers. Well, at least this way she could walk, she thought, even if it did make her look ridiculous.
Are you all right, madam?
Piper glanced up as a tall, venerable-looking man in a crisp white suit approached her from the end of the hall. Even though he had the features and complexions of a human, his height belied his true nature. The neat crest of his hat brushed the ceiling of the hall, some 7 feet up. He was the first non-human she had seen aboard. Piper quickly forced herself upright, straightening her shoulders and puffing out her chest in an attempt to look more important.
Ah, just the man I was hoping to find. Captain Thorne, I presume?
The man's eyes drifted over the disheveled girl and across the strips of fabric she was trying to kick behind her.
You would be correct.
She nodded, stepping closer.
I was wondering if I could have a word with you. You see, I happen to have some experience in situations such as this, and...
The man held up a hand, looking down his hooked nose at the small child.
I'm afraid I do not have time to listen to your concerns at the moment, my dear. There is an issue in the boiler room that is in need of my urgent attention.
He gave her a curt bow of his head before reaching for the door that led to the service quarters. Piper scooped up the scraps of her dress and followed closely behind the man.
I understand that you have your duties, sir, but many of the passengers are growing restless, and I fear they are putting themselves needlessly at risk and could do with some direction.
Captain Thorne paused mid-step, looking over his shoulder.
I'm sorry. Have my staff not provided you with enough caviar and champagne? Did a platter of hors d'oeuvres spill again? Perhaps the sun is too bright, and you fear you may burn if someone does not hold an umbrella over you.
He shot her a glare and doubled his pace.
I have no time for the worry of self-indulgent spoon-feeders like yourself, young miss. There are real issues to be dealt with, so please take up your imagined slights with your own staff.
Piper wasn't sure if she respected his shared disdain for the petty requests of the other passengers, or if she was furious to have been lumped in with them. Perhaps both.
Do you have any idea who I am?
Thorne shook his head as he started descending another staircase.
In truth, you all look the same after a while. I stopped seeing the people behind the fancy clothes decades ago. You're the sixth person today to say that exact line to me.
That's not what I meant.
Her cheeks grew red with embarrassment as Piper realized he was right. She had approached him like a noble woman. Why would he assume any different?
Let me start over. I survived in the waste outside Avis once before. I led an entire group of survivors for weeks. I know a thing or two about...
Yes.
He adjusted his footing, turning on the spot to stare down at her. Even several steps below her, he was still a head taller.
The Prime Minister's adopted children. Your brother was down here earlier as well, telling me what to do.
Piper blinked, her brain failing to formulate a response. Her mouth simply opened and closed, wordlessly.
The High Inquisitor himself.
The sarcasm in his voice was tangible.
Slinging around ideas about how we should improve the main engines. It didn't matter to him that the balloon was punctured, or that the engines are now lodged in the lake bed. Sadly, brilliance is, perhaps, not the same as intelligence.
She could feel a tickle of anger rising in the back of her neck, but Piper tried to control herself.
I'm sure he was only trying to help. Regardless, you have made no effort to scout the surrounding area for threats.
And why should I? The ship is a veritable fortress with enough food stores to supply a small army. If some pompous lord wants to go explore and get himself killed, that is on him.
He pinched the bridge of his nose with an annoyed sigh.
There are bigger issues. Even if we somehow manage to repair the hull and get a working balloon or engine, we would be too waterlogged to take off.
Then send a small group to the nearest town to ask for aid, or at least get word back to Avis so they can send a rescue vessel.
Piper flinched at the look of anger the captain was offering her. But behind those narrowed eyes, she could see a spark of something else. Fear?
When I say there are bigger issues, let me elaborate. There are no forests between Avis and West Ospria.
We were blown off course.
Thorn shook his head.
The storm did more than blow us off course. Until last night, there was no forest anywhere near here. My maps are useless. My equipment is useless.
He thrust a hand upward.
The stars are useless. As far as I can tell, we aren't even on the same world anymore. Now please, tell me again about what the passengers need.
Piper was silent.
That's what I thought. Let me make this clear. The only reason you and your sibling are aboard this vessel is because the Prime Minister begged me for a favor.
Thorn narrowed his eyes once more as he moved closer, climbing the stairs to tower over her.
Upon this vessel, I am king. My word is law. You would do well to remember where you came from, urchin, and be quiet. I will attend to this ship as I always have, without your help or interference.
He leaned in, their faces almost touching.
Am I clear?
She flexed the fingers of her mechanical hand once more, but she held back. She needed time to process this latest information. Viper swallowed her anger, letting out a small murmur.
Yes, Captain.
Good.
Thorn turned around and began descending the steps once more, but a chorus of screams from above halted his actions.
What in the hells is it now?
Piper didn't wait for the captain or his orders. She was already bounding back up the stairs two at a time. Atticus was up there. She burst out through the door and squinted against the bright sunlight. She scoured the deck, looking for her brother and the source of the problem. But the actual cause of the screams she had heard were difficult to discern. Not because people weren't in danger, but because she was spoiled for choices. Flames were quickly spreading over the wooden deck, licking their way along the balloon tethers to engulf much of the ship. The crew had already formed a bucket brigade, attempting to extinguish the blaze with water from the lake. But that had attracted the lake monster she had spotted earlier. A massive creature was attempting to wrangle itself a meal from the side of the ship. It looked like a waterlogged horse, covered in scales and fins, with a mass of swirling seaweed for a mane which it was using to lash around the ankles of several crewmen as they continued to haul water up from the lake. Nearby, several women were slumped in a circle on the deck, sobbing in anguish and covered in swarms of insects that had been attracted to their perfume. Piper even recognized a man that several burly crewmen were restraining. Her hand moved to her mouth. Thorn stepped out onto the deck, and, after he took in all the chaos, merely uttered the words,
"Good gods, my ship!"
He snapped his fingers towards one of the deckhands struggling to hold the prisoner.
"What is this about, then?"
"We caught him setting fire to the deck, sir."
The man flailed about like a child throwing a tantrum.
"I told you, one of your staff said I should. A ratty girl in a horrid dress."
Piper closed her eyes. That painful throb in her temples was back. She opened them, looking around for her brother even as Thorn gave the command to abandon ship. As she spotted the familiar floppy hat among the crowd, she made the decision that, from now on, her betters could fend for themselves.
Whoa! These things are way more impressive close up!
Eric pushed his glasses up his nose to take in the detail of the copper coils of the robot's arms.
What do they use as a power source?
Feeling to pry the machine's metal hands from around his neck, Elias shot a glance at his doppelganger.
Is that really important right now? Sorry, you're right. Questions later.
Tragedy was on his feet, the rush of adrenaline fueling his movements. He cried out as he charged the robot, slamming his shoulder into it. There was a loud clang and a horrendous screeching noise as the metal construct was forced back several feet, sporting a sizable dent in its chest. He turned to the false king.
I'll get Elias. You need to run.
Are you serious?
Eric shook his head with a frown.
Of the two of us, I'm not the one bleeding.
He turned back to the robot.
Besides, these things are immensely fascinating.
The machine's metal face swiveled in the direction of the voice.
Second candidate detected. By order of the Prime Minister, former High Inquisitor Elias Fulgrave is to be captured on sight.
It reached out its free hand towards the target.
Failure to comply will result in immediate elimination.
With surprising speed, Tragedy intercepted the coiled metal arm. He began twisting it and bending it between his hands, shooting the other man a look.
Bloody or not, I'm a hell of a lot stronger than you are. So unless you think you can take this thing in a fight...
Eric ducked beneath the robot's other arm as it swung Elias in his direction. He danced around the machine, keeping in its blind spot as he clambered up its body. He looked down at his hand, watching shadow pool up around his wrist, engulfing his fingers in a void. There was a sound like a cracked church bell, and Elias felt the machine's grip around his neck loosen. He fell into the mud and scrabbled back, gasping for air. He looked up as his doppelganger continued to pound a raven-armored fist into the machine's head, before reaching over to snap off the transmitter antenna.
Honestly?
Eric grinned, clearly proud of himself.
I'd say I have better than average odds.
The machine reached up and grabbed hold of him with a heavy metal hand, hauling the thin man up into the air before slamming him into the ground.
Resistance is ill-advised.
Eric's teeth rattled from the impact, despite the shadow armor that had moved to envelop him.
Ow!
Thankfully, the only permanent damage had been to his ego.
This is not good. I don't think we can beat this thing.
Compartments in the robot's shoulders slid open, and large, unidentifiable, but obviously dangerous protrusions began to poke out.
You have chosen elimination.
He didn't need to have been from a world of higher technology to recognize that the weapons being aimed in his direction were deadly. But as the barrels began to rotate, Eric was reminded of his brother's flamethrower and swallowed hard. Had Vel added a few upgrades of his own? Frozen in place with fear, he was helpless to do anything but cover his head and await death.
This isn't good. I don't think we can beat this thing.
Tragedy slammed his elbow into the side of the machine, knocking it away. The hail of projectiles careened off course, showering the ground with blobs of tar-like glue.
See? Even the mean one agrees.
Eric peeked open an eye to see the adhesive starting to harden, ripping up cobblestones as it contracted into a perfect sphere. If anyone was hit with one of those, he wasn't sure even Wraith could break them free. He scrambled to his feet, turning in the direction where he had seen the king only moments before.
Elias, we need to...
There was only empty, muddy road.
Elias?
The sound of the robot's shoulder guns charging up for a second assault pulled Eric's attention away. He was right in the path of the attack. There was no way he could get clear in time. He had just sent a mental request to Wraith, when there was a loud ping, and then the robot slumped over, the lights in its eyes going dark. Elias wrenched a fistful of wires from the open panel in the machine's back. Power source. He gave his twin a small nod.
Thank you for the idea.
Tragedy clutched his injured arm, the fading adrenaline weakening his movements.
Follow me. We need to get off the streets.
He looked over to the robot.
That thing got off a signal. This place will be crawling with more of them soon.
Falling in line behind the king's bodyguard, Eric looked back to see his twin still staring into the open cabinet of the robot.
Hey, nerd out later. I get it, they're awesome, but we gotta go if you don't want to be eliminated.
Elias gave a small shake of his head.
Maybe that would be best.
He looked down at the brooch still clutched in his hand.
Look at what I've done.
He had never been good with people, but Eric could recognize the loss in his eyes.
And giving up is going to make it better? Grow up.
Elias shot him a hurt look.
What's done is done, and now someone has to fix this mess. Giving up now doesn't help anyone. And as for Pyra?
He pointed at the brooch.
She's incredibly capable. I'd say there's a good chance she might still be out there. Vel, too. So, how about instead of feeling sorry for ourselves, we go and try to do some good?
Elias clutched the gem a little tighter. He didn't have the same hope. But one thing he said was right. Someone had to fix this.
All right. That's more like it. All we need is a way to track them.
With a grin, Eric slapped him on the shoulder.
And I know just the Arcanist who can help.
We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents, Book 4 by Leslie Herron in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
Seriously, if one more person asked me to get them a mojito, I'm going to...
We interrupt your regularly scheduled outro for an important message. In honor of this channel's 500th episode, we would like to bring you this public service announcement.
Hi, my name is Attila Rex, adventurer, inventor, and world-renowned ladies' man. You may have heard of me. When I'm not saving the world from ancient gods or creating dimensional bombs... I told you that wasn't a bomb. I like to go hiking on my local forest trails. And you know what makes that difficult? Forest fires. So please, if you light a fire, keep it small, keep it contained, and keep water nearby. Always follow fire safety guidelines, because only you can prevent forest... What do you mean that's copyright infringement? Fine. Because only you can prevent ignition of woodland areas? Yeah, I'm Attila Rex, and that's it for today's Tall Tale TV.
You can find links to charities for wildfire relief and nature conservation in the description below.